Hello everyone, my name is Elijah David, Minister of the 12th Hour, Apostolic Sabbatarian Congregation, Mount Zion, the 12th Hour, in the Liberty Hill, Texas. Today is August the 10th, 2014, or it's 8:15, 2018. We will start our second service on this day with a song that I've written entitled, Lead Me to the Rock That Is Higher Than I. Lead me to the rock that is higher than I, I'll forever be. Indebted to the sun, the very one who came to set me free. All the life in this world I have to live is but a stepping stone. For the greater heights I have to attain, I've never done alone. Lead me to the rock, oh, lead me to the rock. Lead me to the place at the Savior's feet. Lead me to the mansions in the sky. A man on a mission sent to this world, so I'm born to lie. Born in a major and scarcely a stranger, pretty seen passing by. Oh, the moon shone bright, but the heavenly lights of all the starry host. For the brightest one of them all is the one admired the most. Lead me to the rock that is higher than I. Lead me to the sun that never runs dry. Lead me in the path by the river of life. Lead me to the passage in the sky. For the star pointed to the newborn king as he lay in the manger's crib. He's a descendant of the one created from the Adam's rib. As the time rolled on, many stories are told about the man of the Galilee. How he changed the water into the wine and made the blind to see. Lead me to the rock, oh, lead me to the rock. Lead me to the rock that's higher than mine. Lead me to the place at the Savior's feet. Lead me to the message in the sky. For this is the man for all kinds of human come to realize. For the witness of many miracles right before their eyes. For he lived and died, he rose again with the victory over the grave. Proven once and for all that he has the power to save. Don't leave me in the desert, barren and dry. Vanquished forever and left to die. Rather, lead me to the fountain that never runs dry. To the rock that's higher than I. Lead me to the rock, oh, lead me to the rock. Lead me to the rock that's higher than I. Lead me to the place of the Savior's feet. Lead me to those mansions in the sky. Oh yes, lead me to those mansions in the sky. Part 16, Everlasting Kingdom of the David. We're going to continue on. We're in the time of reading, volume 2, number 12. The subtitle is The Revelation. What is it? We're on page 25. Okay, we're going to refer to a prayer thought taken from Daniel chapter 7. It says, in the first year of Belshazzar, king of the Babylon, Daniel had a dream and visions of his head upon his bed. Then he wrote the dream and told the sum of the matter. Daniel spake and said, I saw in my vision by the night, and behold, the four winds of the heavens stove upon the great sea, and four great beasts came up from the sea, diverse one from another. The first was like a lion, and had eagle's wings. I beheld till the wings thereof were plucked, and it was lifted up from the earth, and made stand upon the feet as a man. And a man's heart was given unto it, and behold, another beast, a second like unto a bear, and it raised up itself on the one side, and it had three ribs in the mouth of it, between the teeth of it, and they said thus unto it, Arise, devour much flesh. After this I beheld, and lo, another, like a leopard, which had upon the back of it four wings of a fowl. The beast had also four heads, and dominion was given unto it. After this I saw in the night visions, and behold, a fourth beast, dreadful and terrible, and strong exceedingly, and it had great iron teeth. It devoured and brake in pieces, and stamped the residue with the feet of it, and it was diverse from all the beasts that were before it, and it had 10 horns. I considered the horns, and behold, there came up among them another little horn, before whom there were three of the first horns plucked up by the root. And behold, in his horn were eyes like the eyes of a man, and a mouth speaking great things. I beheld till the thrones were cast down, and the Ancient of Days did sit, whose garment was white as snow, and the hair of his head like the pure wool. His throne was like the fiery flame, and his wheels as a burning fire. A fiery stream issued and came forth from before him. Thousand thousands ministered unto him, and 10,000 times 10,000 stood before him. The judgment was set, and the books were opened. I beheld then, because of the voice of the great words of which the horn spake, I beheld even till the beast was slain, and his body destroyed and given unto the burning flame. As concerning the rest of the beast, they had their dominion taken away, yet their lives were prolonged for a season and time. I saw in the night visions, and behold, one like the Son of Man came with the clouds of heaven, and came unto the Ancient of Days, and they brought him near before him. And there was given him dominion and glory and a kingdom, that all people, nations, and languages should serve him. His dominion is an everlasting dominion which shall not pass away, and his kingdom that which shall not be destroyed. I, Daniel, was grieved in my spirit in the midst of my body, and the visions of my head troubled me. I came near unto one of them that stood by, and asked him the truth of all this. So he told me, and made me know the interpretation of the thing. These great beasts which are four are four kings, which shall arise out of the earth. But the saints of the Most High shall take the kingdom and possess the kingdom forever, even forever and ever. Okay, so there is a kingdom that the saints are to take. That's the kingdom of David. Okay, that's, matter of fact, the everlasting kingdom of David has always been here since Yahweh made the covenant with David. And about, 1010 B.C. Okay. And I would know the truth of the fourth beast, which was diverse from all the others, exceeding dreadful, whose teeth were the iron, his nails of brass, which devoured, break in pieces, and stamped the residue with his feet. And of the 10 horns that were in his head, and of the other which came up, before whom 3 fell, even of that horn that had eyes and a mouth that spake very good, great things, whose luck was more stout than his fellows, I beheld, and the same horn made war with the saints, and prevailed against them, until the Ancient of Days came, and judgment was given unto the saints of the Most High, and the time came that the saints possessed the kingdom. Thus he said, The fourth beast shall be the fourth kingdom upon the earth, which shall be diverse from all kingdoms, and shall devour the whole earth, and shall tread it down and break it in pieces. And the 10 horns out of this kingdom are 10 kings that shall arise, and another shall rise after them, and he shall be diverse from the first, and he shall subdue 3 kings, and he shall speak great words against the Most High, and shall wear out the saints of the Most High, and think to change times and laws. That's during the Dark Ages with the Catholic Church. And they shall be given into his hand until a time and times divided of time, 1,260 years. But the judgment shall sit, and they shall take away his dominion to consume and to destroy it unto the end. And the kingdom and the dominion and the greatness of the kingdom out of the whole heaven shall be given unto the people of the saints of the Most High, whose kingdom is an everlasting kingdom, and all dominions shall serve and obey him. Hitherto is the end of the matter, and as for me, Daniel, my cogitations much troubled me, and my countenance changed in me, but I kept the matter in my heart. Now let's go to Hebrews chapter 7. Let's read the whole chapter. For this Melchizedek, king of Salem, priest of the Most High Elohim, who met Abraham returning from the slaughter of the kings and blessed him, on whom also Abraham gave a tenth part of all, first being by the interpretation king of righteousness, and after that also king of Salem, which is king of the peace. Now, Ellen G. White in the Zohar of Ages says this Melchizedek is Yahshua. Verse 3, without father, without mother, without descent, having neither beginning of days nor end of life, but made like unto the son of Elohim, abideth a priest continually. Okay. Now consider how great this man was, unto whom even the patriarch Abraham gave the tenth of the spoils. And verily they that are of the sons of Levi, who received the office of the priesthood, have a commandment to take tithes of the people according unto the law, that is, of their brethren, though they come out of the loins of Abraham. But he whose descent is not counted from them received tithes of Abraham and blessed him that had the promises. And without all contradiction, the less is blessed of the better. And here men that die receive tithes, but there he receives them of whom it is witnessed that he liveth. And as I may so say, Levi also, who receiveth tithes, paid tithes in Abraham. For he was yet in the loins of his father when Melchizedek met him. If therefore perfection were by the Levitical priesthood, for with it the people received the law, what further need was there that another priest should rise after the order of Melchizedek and not be called after the order of Aaron? For the priesthood being changed, there is made of the necessity a change also of the law. For he of whom these things are spoken pertaineth to another tribe, of which no man gave attendance at the altar. For it is evident that our Yahshua sprang out of Judah, of which tribe Moses spake nothing concerning priesthood. And it is yet far more evident, for that after the similitude of Melchizedek there arises another priest, who is made not after the law of a carnal commandment, but after the power of an endless life. And this is Yahshua. And here's another good point to think about. Judah is one of the two tribes that produced the priesthood. Okay, the tribe of Levi and the tribe of Judah. He is made not after the law of a carnal commandment, but after the power of an endless life. For he testified, thou art a priest forever after the order of Melchizedek. For there is verily a disannulling of the commandment given going before for the weakness and unprofitableness thereof. For the law made nothing perfect but the bringing in of a better hope did, by the which we draw nigh unto the Yahweh. And inasmuch as not without an oath, he was made priest. For those priests were made without an oath, but this with an oath by him that said unto him, the Yahweh swear and will not repent, thou art a priest forever, after the order of Melchizedek. By so much was Yahshua made a surety of a better testament. And they truly were many priests, because they were not suffered to continue by reason of the death. But this man, because he continues ever, hath an unchangeable priesthood. Wherefore he is able also to save them unto the uttermost that come unto Elohim by him, seeing how he ever liveth to make intercession for them. For such an high priest became us, who is holy, harmless, undefiled, separate from sinners, and made higher than the heavens, who needeth not daily as a high priest to offer up sacrifice, first for his own sin, and then for the people. For this he did once, when he offered up himself. For the law maketh men high priests which have infirmities, but the word of the oath, which was since the law, maketh the Son of Man who is consecrated forevermore. Believe it or not, David was consecrated forevermore. That's reading Yahweh made a covenant with David, an everlasting covenant, because he was consecrated by Samuel forevermore. Now the things which we have spoken, these this is a psalm, and this is Hebrews chapter 8. Said, we have such an high priest who is sit on the right hand of the throne of the majesty in the heaven, a minister of the sanctuary and of the true tabernacle, which is Yahshua pitched and not man. Now, Yahshua goes into the high heavens to minister in the true tabernacle. And Hebrews chapter 12, verse 22, 23, 24 tells us that this tabernacle on earth and one in heaven is one and the same. So it says right there, but you are coming to Mount Zion, Hebrews 12, 22. And unto the city of the living Elohim, the heavenly Yerushalayim, and to an innumerable company of angels, to the general assembly and church of the firstborn which are written in heaven. And to Yahshua, the church of all, and unto the spirits of just men made perfect. So Yahshua is a minister in heaven of his church here on earth. So when you minister the tabernacle here on earth, and you have a replica of the one in heaven, and Yahweh give it to you, Yahshua give it to you, and cause you to put it in operation, it is synchronized with the one in heaven. So they become one in purpose. So you see why Yahshua is very upset when he gave that commission to Verus to build the sanctuary and restore it back to his rightful order and put it into operation and be in perfect timing with heaven's sanctuary. Okay, and doing everything after the pattern that was shown Moses in the Mount. It was left on record. So you see why Yahshua was upset when he came in 2002 and he found his slothful servant duplicating the sanctuary in heaven. Okay. It says in Hebrews 12:24, unto Yahshua the mediator of the new covenant, and to the blood of the sprinkling that speaketh better things than that of Abel. See, as you refuse not him that speaketh, for if they accepted not For if they escape not, who refuse him that spake on earth, much more shall not we escape if we turn away from him that speaketh in heaven, whose voice then shook the earth. But now he hath promised, saying, yet once more I shake not the earth only, but also heaven. And this word, yet once more, signifies the removing of those things that are shaken, as of things that are made, that those things which cannot be shaken may remain. So, that's what happened. When the shaking started, the earthquake started in the church in 2002 at Kermit, he shook out those that could be shaken. And those that couldn't be shaken, they remain. That's why we're here talking to you today. We couldn't be shaken by that idolatrous and false teaching of that prophet down there at that time. Wherefore, we receiving a kingdom which cannot be moved, let us have grace whereby we may serve Yahweh acceptably with reverence and righteous fear. For our Elohim is a consuming fire. Now, where did that quote come from? Deuteronomy 4:24. Let's go read it. Our Elohim is a consuming fire. It says that, for the Yahweh thy Elohim is a consuming fire, even a jealous Elohim. Okay. Verse 23 of Deuteronomy 4. Take heed unto yourself, lest you forget the covenant of the Yahweh your Elohim, that she made with you, and make you a graven image, or the likeness of any which the Yahweh the Elohim has forbidden thee. For the Yahweh the Elohim is a consuming fire, even a jealous Elohim. So, what was Yahweh saying then to the prophet in Israel, a trumpet? He says, take heed unto yourself that you forget, unless you forget the covenant of the Yahweh Elohim, which he made with you, and make you a graven image. That's exactly what they did. They forgot the covenant that Yahweh made with him, Brother Johnson. He forgot it. And he made him a graven image. The idolatry of the world, it became his graven image. Okay. Or the likeness of anything which the Yahweh thy Elohim has forbidden thee. For the Yahweh thy Elohim is a consuming fire, even a jealous Elohim. So now this is a prophecy that coincides with Hebrews chapter 12, where it says in verse 28, that wherefore we receive in a kingdom, an everlasting kingdom of heaven, which is the everlasting kingdom of David, which cannot be moved. Let us have grace whereby we may serve Elohim acceptably with reverence and righteous fear. For our Elohim is a consuming fire. Okay, so now, let's continue reading Hebrews chapter 8 now. For it says, now the things which we have spoken, this is the time we have such an high priest who sit on the right hand of the throne of majesty in the heavens. A minister of the sanctuary and of the true tabernacle, which Yahshua pitched and not man. Well, Yahshua pitched that tabernacle in Kermit in 1970. That was a true tabernacle. He pitched it. And he placed his servant, Verlis, over in charge of it. For it says, for every high priest is ordained to offer gifts and sacrifices. So, what is that? Was Verlis a high priest? Well, he was put in charge of the earthly tabernacle. Let's see what Joel chapter 2 has to say about this high priest. Let's see what Joel chapter 2 has to say about this. Verse about 15. It says, let the priests and ministers of the Yahweh plead before the porch and the altar. It says, blow ye the trumpet in Zion. Sanctify fast, call the solemn assembly, gather the people, sanctify the congregation, assemble the elders, gather the children and those that suck the breath. Let the bride go forth of his chamber and the bride out of her closet. Let the priests, the ministers of the Yahweh, weep between the porch and the altar. Let them say, spare thy people, O Yahweh, and give not thine heritage reproach, that the heathen should rule over them, which would be the Adventist church. If once you restored the sanctuary and started following the ordained system of true worship, and start sanctifying your steps day by day. Okay, and then you turn around and failed and went back to your old ways, serving idols and so forth. Then the heathen will take back up and rule over you again. And that would be the heathen from your former brethren. Wherefore should they say among the people, where is the Elohim? Okay, but if your leader apostatizes and go back into idolatry, and you're under his tutelage, and you're a member of his church, then he's ruling over you until Yahshua comes and delivers you and releases you from his rule. Okay, so now in Hebrews chapter 8 it says, for every high priest is ordained to offer gifts, okay? For if he were on earth, he should not be a priest, seeing that there are priests that offer gifts according to the law, who serve unto the example and shadow of heavenly things, as Moses was admonished of Elohim when he was about to make the tabernacle. For see, saith he, that thou make all things according unto the pattern showed unto thee in the mount. But now hath he obtained a more excellent ministry by how much also he is the mediator of a better covenant, which was established upon better promises. For if that first covenant had been faultless, then should no praise have been sought for the second. For finding fault with them, he saith, behold, the days come, saith the Yahshua, and I will make a new covenant with the house of Israel, and with the house of Judah, the my lawgiver, the priesthood tribe. Judah is a priesthood tribe. Not according unto the covenant that I made with their fathers in the day when I took them by the hand to lead them out of the land of Egypt, because they continue not in my covenant, and I regard them not, saith the Yahweh. For this is the covenant that I will make with the house of Israel after those days, saith Yahweh. I will put my laws in their mind, write them in their hearts, and I will be unto them at Elohim, and they shall be unto me people. Okay, now this is a these are people that is preordained that their identity had been lost. Their identity is lost right now. Matter of fact, our identity is hidden right here in Liberty Hill. We're the spiritual Israel, house of David, tribe of Judah, but nobody in this Liberty Hill knows it. The church that we were separated from, Gilead Center, wouldn't accept it if you told it to them. He wouldn't believe it. So, the Yahweh knows who we are. And he gives us our daily messages, and we record them. Okay, and they shall not teach every man his neighbor and every man his brother, saying, know the Yahshua, for all shall know me from the least unto the greatest. For I will be merciful unto their unrighteousness, and their sins and their iniquities will I remember no more. So he was merciful to the unrighteousness of the antiquity Elijah David, and those that continued with him out of the 11th hour, he had mercy on their unrighteousness and their sins and their iniquities. We had all of it. We were full of it. We didn't know how to be delivered from it until Yahshua come and led us out of there by the hand. And then he began to teach us of anew, with that extra new oil that we put in our vessel. The truth is in that. So let's go on, verse 13. He that, in that he saith a new covenant, he hath made the first old. Now that which decayeth and waxeth old is ready to vanish away. But when did that old covenant finally decay and wax old and vanish away? 2002. Because that old covenant reached clear up to spiritual Israel of the day and totally decimated the Adventist church, showing that that old covenant was still in effect, clear up to 2002. If it wasn't, then what was it that decimated then all the Christian churches, what they call Christians and Protestants and Adventists and spiritualism? What decimated them if that old covenant hadn't reached clear up to our time? Okay. Then it says in Hebrews chapter 9, it says, then verily the first covenant had also ordinances of divine service and a worldly sanctuary. Okay. Well, that worldly sanctuary doesn't mean that it was an unholy sanctuary. It just means that we had a literal sanctuary in operation here on this earth, built after the pattern in heaven. For there was a tabernacle made, the first wherein was a candlestick and the table and the showbread, which is called the sanctuary. And after the second veil, the tabernacle, which is called the holiest of all, which had the golden censer and the ark of the covenant, overlaid round about with gold, wherein was a golden pot that had manna and Aaron's rod that budded, and the tables of the covenant, and over it the cherubims of the glory shadowing the mercy seat, of which we cannot now speak particularly. Now when these things were thus ordained, the priest went always into the first tabernacle, accomplishing the service of Elohim, but into the second went the high priest alone once every year, not without blood, which he offered for himself and for the errors of the people. For the Holy Spirit did signify that the way into the holiest of all was not yet made manifest, while the first tabernacle was yet standing, which was a figure for the times and present, in which were offered both gifts and sacrifices that could not make him that did the service perfect, as pertaining unto the conscience, which did only in meats and drinks and divers washing and carnal ordinances imposed on them until the time of the Reformation. But Yahshua being come and high priest of good things to come, by a greater and more a perfect tabernacle, not made with the hands, that is to say, not of this building, neither by the blood of goats and calves, but by his own blood, he entered in once into the holy place, having obtained eternal redemption for us. With the blood of bulls and of goats and of the ashes of an heifer, sprinkling the unclean, sanctifieth unto the purifying of the flesh. How much more shall the blood of Yahshua, who through the eternal Spirit offered himself without spot unto him, purge your conscience from dead works to serve the living Elohim? And for this cause he is a mediator of the New Testament, that by means of death for the redemption of the transgressions that were under the first testament. For you see, he had to redeem those of the transgression of the first testament by his blood and his death on the cross. And then it says in Romans 5, 8, 9 to 10, it says, we're justified by faith in his blood. We're reconciled unto him by the death of his son. Much more being reconciled, we're saved by his life. Okay, let's continue on here. They which are called, verse 15, Hebrews 9. It says, and for this cause he is the mediator of the New Testament, that by the means of the death, for the redemption of the transgressions that were under the first testament. So that's why he literally had to die on the cross. He had to literally die to redeem those under the first testament. But now he doesn't have to die anymore to redeem those under the New Testament. He redeems those under the New Testament that follows the blood system of the sanctuary. With Yahshua as a new and living way, Hebrews 10:20. Okay, the they which are called might receive the promise of eternal inheritance. So he had to die to redeem them on the old covenant, so that those which had been called for salvation might receive the promise of the eternal inheritance. If Yahshua don't die, they don't resurrect, and they don't receive the promise of their inheritance. Okay, for where a testament is, there must also of necessity be the death of the testator. Okay, for a testament is a force after men are dead, otherwise it is of no strength at all while the testator liveth. Whereupon another, the first testament was dedicated without blood. For when Moses had spoken every precept unto all the people according to the law, he took the blood of the calves and of goats with the water and scarlet wool, and hyssops, and sprinkled both the book and all the people, saying, this is the blood of the testament which Elohim hath enjoined unto you. Moreover, he sprinkled with both the blood both the tabernacle and all the vessels of the ministry, and almost all things about the law purged with the blood, and without the shedding of blood is no remission. It is therefore necessary that the patterns of the things in the heavens should be purified with these, that the heavenly things themselves with better sacrifices than these, for Yahshua has not entered into the holy places made with the hand, which are the figure of the truth, but into heaven itself now to appear in the presence of Elohim for us, nor yet that he should offer himself often as a high priest, entereth into the holy place every year with the blood of others, for then must he often have suffered since the foundation of the world, but now once in the end of the world hath he appeared to put away sin by the sacrifice of himself. And as it is appointed unto men once to die, but after this the judgment, Yahshua was once offered to bear the sins of men, and unto them that look for him shall he appear the second time without sin unto salvation. Okay. So when he comes the second time, he's going to appear without sin unto salvation. Okay, that pretty much wraps up our prayer thought. We're going to go now into our main theme, time of reading, volume 2, number 12. We're in this Revelation, what is it? To find out that it's the book of the seven seals, inclusive. We're on page 25, it says, for the revelation then is thus divided into seven parts. And so when we speak of the seven seals, we are in reality speaking of the revelation. For the last of the seals, the seventh, is divided into still other seven divisions, the seven trumpets, which began with the eighth chapter and apparently end with the 11th chapter. So the next thing to note is the event which caused the book to be opened. For a ready comprehension, I have reproduce a pen drawing of the event, and I may mention that I have been very careful to pin it exactly as John describes it. For the lack of space, though, the myriads of angels round about the throne are missing in the drawing. Here is the drawing. This shows the judgment scene. 24 elders, 4 beasts, Yahweh sitting upon the throne, and the Lamb with the 7 horns standing in the midst of the throne. Revelation 5. What is the event which caused the book seals to be broken? To find the answer under this question, we should first consider the members in the assembly. There we see one on the throne, then the Lamb next under the elders, and as the myriads of angels round about the throne, also the beasts, who themselves testify that they are a symbolical representation of the redeemed. For they say, "For thou wast slain and hast redeemed us unto the Elohim by thy blood out of every kindred and tongue and people and nation." Revelation 5:9. What else could such an assembly as this represent but a judgment? There we see the Judge of Justice, our great advocate, sitting on the throne. Then the Lamb and the jury of 24, also the angelic witness and the 4 beasts representing the redeemed. Moreover, the Revelation itself most emphatically declares that the event prophetically is the judgment in the session, for it says, "Fear Elohim and give glory unto him, for the hour of his judgment is come. And worship him that made the heaven and the earth and the sea and the fountains of water." Revelation 14:7. For the prophet Daniel too, whose book is a complement unto the Revelation, was given a glimpse of the judgment, for he saw the Ancient of the Days sitting on the throne, also the thrones upon which evidently sit the 24 elders. He also saw the myriads of angels and the one like unto the Son of Man, the Lamb, brought near before the Ancient of the Days. In the juxtaposition, the prophecy by the Daniel, which the revelation by the John stand as follows. It's the revelation by the John. Okay, it says, in Daniel's vision, in Daniel 7, it says, verse 9, I beheld till the thrones were cast down. And in Revelation 20, verse 4, it says, "And I saw thrones." Daniel 7:9, "And the Ancient of Days did sit." Revelation 4:2, "And one sat on the throne." Number 3, "A fire stream issued and came forth from before him." Daniel 7:10. Revelation 15:2, "And I saw that were a sea of glass mingled with the fire." And number 4, "One like the Son of Man came to the Ancient of Days, and they brought him near before him." Daniel 7:13. Revelation, "In the midst of the throne and of the 4 beasts stood a lamb." Revelation 5:6. Number 5, "The books were opened." Daniel 7:10. And "The books were opened." Revelation 20, verse 12. And number 6, "1,000,000 ministered unto him, and 10,000 times 10,000 stood before him." And Daniel 7:10. "And I heard the voice of many angels round about the throne, and the number of them was 10,000 times 10,000, and thousands of thousands." Revelation 5:11. Number 7, "The judgment was set, and the books were opened." Daniel 7:10. Revelation 14:7. "The hour of his judgment is come, and I saw the dead, small and great, stand before Elohim, and the books were open, and another book was opened, which is the book of life, and the dead were judged out of those things which were written in the books according unto their works." Revelation 20, verse 12. For the only difference, you see, is that Daniel was shown the judgment being set up, whereas John saw it in a full session. For the revelation, moreover, in the following verses, again and again endeavors to make us see that the event there are portrayed in the judgment in session. Fear Elohim and give glory unto him, for the hour of his judgment is come. And I saw thrones, John declared, and judgment was given unto them, Revelation 20, verse 4. John truly penned it as a prophecy, but when it actually takes place, then Elohim's agencies on the earth, the spirit of the prophecy, in the church, is to proclaim that the event has actually taken place. Since the records of both the dead and the living must be reviewed by the judicial tribunal, the first angel's message, Revelation 14:6, must be proclaimed in both periods, in the period of the judgment of the dead, and by a loud cry in the period of the judgment of the living. For the direct application of the first angel's message, therefore, also the call to come out of Babylon are actually made in the day that the earth is lightened with the glory of the angel, Revelation 18:1-4. For the revelation, therefore, is to be more fully understood during the judgment of the living. For the light that now shines on our path is an unmistakable evidence that we are approaching the time of the judgment of the living, the time when the Son of Man shall come in his glory, and all the holy angels with him. Then shall he sit upon the throne of his glory, and behold, him shall be gathered all nations, and he shall separate them one from another, as a shepherd divides his sheep from the goats, Matthew 25:31-33. Now, since the revelation unveils the judicial proceedings of the whole human race, and since it opened with the book sealed with the seven seals, and also since the revelation, as shown before, consists of the things which were in the sealed book, then it is logical that the revelation contains a brief sketch of a human history from the beginning of the world unto the end. For the contents of the seven seals, therefore, comprehends all mankind, and must begin with Adam, the first man on the earth. This fact is again particularly noticeable from the fact that the things which the first five seals are revealed are covered in 1, 2, or 3 verses respectively, whereas the last two seals, which contain the things that pertain unto the judgment of the living and to the people who must know that their cases are on the trial, are quite long. For the record of the things which the sixth seal reveals is 22 verses long, and the seventh seal is 15 chapters long. You see, my friends, that what we have in this study is not a theory, not someone's far-fetched and fanciful ideas, but Elohim's whole truth. This is Bible instead of, oh, what a lesson, too. How then can you and I afford to let our salvation slip from our grasp? How can we afford to be careless and indifferent under these most solemn words in all the history of mankind? Shall we not prepare to meet our Elohim in the peace? Shall we not now, as wise virgins, fill our vessels with this light-giving oil, so as to be able to refill our lamps? Or shall we, as fools, neglect our opportunity and thus be hindered from arriving at the door before it is closed against us? How terrible, even, the thought of hearing the Master from within say, "Depart from me, I never knew you." It is because we have come unto just such a solemn time as this, that these studies are through the great expense and through the great sacrifice are scattered as the leaves of the autumn throughout the Laodicea. Why should anyone cheat himself of the eternal life, crowned with the joy and happiness? Elohim forbid that any of us should be found such as the parable presents the five foolish virgins to be. You can very easily become trapped with those five foolish virgins, I'll tell you, just by not being alert, you can be trapped. Let's go now and continue on. We're in Plant Ingredients, Volume 2, Number 13. We just finished Number 12. And the subtitle for this one is, Where Do the Seals and the Trumpets Begin and End? Text of Edison of E.T. Hall, November the 1st, 1947. And it says the prayer thought for that one is the chronological setting of the Revelation chapter by chapter, the summary. The prayer thought is taken from Christ's Object Lesson by Ellen G. White, page 48. It says, true holiness is wholeness in the service. Many feel a sense of the estrangement from the Elohim, a realization of their bondage to self and sin. They make efforts to reform, but they do not crucify self. They do not give themselves entirely into the hands of Yahshua, seeking for the divine power to do His will. They are not willing to be molded after the divine similitude. In a general way, they acknowledge their imperfection, but they do not give up their particular sin. For the only hope for these souls is to realize in themselves the truth of Yahshua's words unto Nicodemus. You must be born again. Except a man be born from above, he cannot see the kingdom of the Elohim. True holiness is wholeness in the service of Yahweh. This is a condition of the true Christian living, but Yahshua asks for an unreserved consecration. For the undivided service, he demands the heart, the mind, the soul, the strength. The self is not to be cherished. He who lives unto himself is not a Christian. We are commanded here to draw nigh unto Yahshua and depart from self. Okay, now did you get that all day long? Did you get that? We are commanded here to draw nigh unto Yahshua and depart from self. Okay, so it says self is not to be cherished. He who lives unto himself is not a Christian. Okay. So according to that statement by Ellen G. White, Alan and y'all are not Christians. Because you've been invited to come to the kingdom, to take a position in the kingdom. You've been offered a position in the kingdom. Sharon was offered twice. She turned it down twice. She accepted it twice and turned it down twice. And Alan, he has never accepted the position in the kingdom. He's been offered it many, many times. Okay, over a 33-year period, and he refused to take a position and do his duty there. So because they live under themselves. They just want to satisfy self. And number one, they have to satisfy self, number one, and then they have to satisfy Yeshua, number two. Okay, let's go on. It says, we are commanded here to draw nigh unto Yeshua and depart from self. And that before we can be born again, we must first die to sin. Let us pray that we may realize that if we feel we are estranged from Elohim, the fault is ours, and that we must do something to remedy the situation, that we must accept Yahshua's gracious invitation. Come unto me, all ye that are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. That is peace. I'll give you peace. Okay, so now, what about this peace? Now, the kingdom of peace is referred to in three scriptures in the KJV, Esther 9:30, and he sent the letters unto all the Jews, unto the 127 provinces of the kingdom of the Ashkenazi, with the words of the peace and truth, Isaiah 9:7, of the increase of his government and peace there shall be no end, upon the throne of David, and upon his kingdom to order it and to establish it with judgment and with justice from henceforth even forever. For the zeal of the Yahshua of the host will perform this. Let's look a little bit more about this here, Isaiah 9:7. It says in verse 8, the Yahshua sent a word unto Jacob, and it hath light upon Israel. Okay. So actually, it said, pretty much said it all down reading Isaiah 9, 6 and 7. It says, "For unto us a child is born, unto us a son is given, and the government shall be upon his shoulder, and his name shall be called Wonderful Counselor, the Mighty Elohim," okay, "the Everlasting Father, the Prince of Peace." So Yahshua, according to Isaiah, is become the Elohim, the Father of this world. He's the Everlasting Father, and he's the Prince of Peace. It says, "Of the increase of his government and peace, there shall be no end upon the throne of David, and upon his kingdom to order and to establish it with judgment and with justice, from henceforth even forever. For the zeal of the Yahshua of hosts will perform this." So this is what's going on right now. Yahshua is performing this by his zeal. He's setting up this everlasting kingdom that will never be destroyed or left to other people. "They shall break in pieces, subdue all the other kingdoms, and it shall stand forever." So it says, "Of the increase of his government," that's this little stone hewn out of the mountain without hands, that strikes the image on the feet and grows into a mountain and fills the whole earth. That's the increase of his government. It starts out as a grain of mustard seed. It starts out as a little stone, and it grows into a mountain that fills the whole earth. That's the increase of his government. And every time that government increases, it's a kingdom of peace. It spreads out just a little further and a little further. Every time it increases, the kingdom takes in more area until it takes in the whole world. Right in the eyes of the heathen. Okay. So that's pretty interesting. All right. Back to our regular reading here now. Where do the seals and trumpets begin and end? This afternoon we shall see where each seal and trumpet begins and ends. Let us first read the description of the first five seals, Revelation 6:1-11. "And I saw when the Lamb opened one of the seals, and I heard as it were the noise of the thunder, one of the four beasts saying, Come and see. And I saw, and behold, a white horse, and he that sat on him had a bow, and a crown was given unto him, and he went forth conquering and to conquer. And when he had opened the second seal, I heard the second beast say, Come and see. And there went out another horse that was red, and power was given unto him that sat there and take peace from the earth, and that they should kill one another. And there was given unto him a great sword. And when he had opened the third seal, I heard the third beast say, Come and see. And I beheld, and lo, a black horse, and he that sat on him had a pair of balances in his hand. And I heard a voice in the midst of the four beasts saying, A measure of wheat for a penny, and three measures of barley for a penny, and a seed thou heard not the oil and the wine. And when he had opened the fourth seal, I heard the voice of the fourth beast say, Come and see. And I left, and behold, a pale horse, and his name that sat on him was Death, and hell followed with him. And power was given unto them over the fourth part of the earth to kill with the sword, and with hunger, and with the dead, and with the beasts of the earth. And when he had opened the fifth seal, I saw under the altar the souls of them that were slain for the word of Elohim, and for their testimony which they held. And they cried with a loud voice, saying, How long, O Master, holy and true, dost thou not judge and avenge our blood on them that dwell on the earth? And white robes were given unto every one of them, and it was said unto them that they should rest yet a little season, until the fellow servants also and their brethren that should be killed as they were should be fulfilled. Okay, it says, to find where the seals began, we shall carefully note that the history's record records only one period of the martyrdom, such as is described in the fourth to fifth seal, for the martyrdom that began with John the Baptist, and with but a little interruption, continued to be about the middle of the 18th century. Obviously, then, the fourth seal opened with the closing of the Old Testament time and the beginning of the New. Since the 1880s and since the seals are consecutive, the first three seals find their fulfillment not in the New Testament period, but in the Old Testament period. Now let us see when this second seal began. We are told that the writer of the second seal was to take peace from the earth, implying that there had been peace before. To learn the time of the second seal, therefore, we need to answer the question, when was peace taken away from the earth? We all know that there was no wars before the flood, that wars began after the confusion of the tongues and at the Tower of Babel, after the human family had been divided into numerous tongues, nations, and races. The first war recorded in the sacred history was fought in the days of Abraham, and wars have stayed with us ever since. Before that day, there was peace. Where else then could the second seal apply? But after the flood, the time peace was taken away from the earth. Finally, the history of the first seal must be sought and appeared before the flood. The color white of the horse itself speaks of peace, and so obviously the seals begin with the creation. What could the horse's driver by men symbolize? They can symbolize only something over which man rules. For a rider always rules that which he rides. For the horseman then must be symbolic of the man's rule over the creation of the Elohim. For the color of the horses and the professions of their riders show progress in the greed and crime. It is evident from the symbolism that man's rule in the world has not wrought improvement. For the white horse who knows peace and purity, which existed only at the beginning of the creation of the Elohim, by the rider of the white horse has seen man's great aim to subdue and to replenish the earth, and by the red horse and its rider we see the bloodshed and wars. This brutality led the way for the black horse to come on the scene. The color black is significant of the enslaving nation, and the balances are expressive of the inventing commercial scheme to obtain wealth. The fourth horse, the pale, portrays a system of indefinable character, difficult to distinguish whether Christian or pagan hypocrisy, for the fifth seal shows that the persecution of the saints continued until the opening of the sixth seal. And are not these the headlines of history? For the seal therefore began with the commencement of these things. Okay, and in Revelation 6:12-17, and I beheld when he had opened the sixth seal, and lo, there was a great earthquake, and the sun became black as a sackcloth of hair, and the moon became as the blood, and the stars of heaven fell onto the earth, even as a fig tree casts her untimely figs when she is shaken of a mighty wind. And the heaven departed as a scroll when it is rolled together, and every mountain and island were moved out of their places, and the kings of the earth, and the great men, and the rich men, and the chief captains, and the mighty men, and every bondman, and every free man hid themselves in the den, and in the rocks of the mountains, and said unto the mountains and rocks, fall on us, and hide us in the face of him that sitteth on the throne, and from the wrath of the Lamb, for the great day of his wrath is come, and who shall be able to stand? This brings the close of our study. This hour contest is yet the 11th hour call, and as number 11 is on an audio archive, we're going to close now with a song. Come thou, Almighty King.
Come thou, Almighty King, help us unend to sing, help us to pray. Father, how glorious, what all victorious, come and pray all for us, Ancient of Days. All thou incarnate Word, gird on the mighty sword, after a ten, command the people bless, and give our first success. Lift up holiness, all us being saved. Come, Holy Spirit, a sacred witness there in this red heart, the almighty heart.
This brings to close our service hour contest at the 11th hour call. We're going to close this service now with a song entitled, Oh, Worship the King. Oh, worship the King, O glorious above, and gratefully sing His wonderful love. Our shield and defender, the Ancient of Days, pavilion in splendor and girded with praise. Oh, tell of His might, oh, sing of His grace, whose robe is the light, whose canopy space. His chariots of wrath, the deep thunder clouds form, and dark is His path on the wings of the storm. A bountiful care, what tongue can recite? It breathes in the air, it shines in the light. It streams from the hills, it descends to the plain, and sweetly distilling the dew and the rain. We're children of dust and feeble as frail. In Thee do we trust, nor find Thee to fail. Thy mercies have tended, have firm to the end. Our Maker, Defender, Redeemer, and Friend.